Well, shalom, y'all. Just want to invite you to this week's teaching. You know, great shalom have those who love his Torah. And it says that nothing will cause them to stumble. And that is the very reason why we like to read his Torah, why we like to study his Torah, and why we like to apply it to our life every day, because we love him, and because we love him, we have a desire to walk in his ways. And when we walk in his ways, nothing will cause us to stumble. His Torah, the instructions he has given us, they lead us. They're like a roadmap for us. They provide safety for us. They protect us from the plans and the schemes of the enemy and the things of this world. So it really does go well for us when we walk in his word, when we have a desire to walk in his word, and we actually do it, when we're actually obedient to it. You know, shalom, it means to have peace. So great peace to those who love his Torah and walk in his Torah. Shalom means so much more than peace, though it also speaks of an idea of completeness, of satisfaction, and so much comes with that word. So to think about great shalom, so peace and completeness do those have who love his Torah and who walk in it. The desire is to have a complete faith, right? A perfect faith with him. And we obtain that the more we walk in his word, the more obedient we are to his word, the more complete we are in our faith and in our purity, or in our set apartness before him and to the world around us. The saltier we are to the earth, and the brighter our light is to the nations that are around us. So with that said, we're actually going to be talking about the blessings of walking in his obedience and the joy that comes from walking in obedience to his word. This week, we are reading the very last Torah portion for the book of Leviticus. So we are closing out the book of Leviticus in this teaching. So we're going to be teaching from Leviticus chapter 26, and we're going to start with verse 3. It says, "If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and perform them, then I will give you rain in its season, the land shall yield its produce, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit." Now, I want to stop here for a second, and let's look at what we see here in verse 3. He says, "If you walk in my statutes." So what we're seeing here is the covenant that Yahweh is giving to the children of Israel, which is extended to us as believers in Yeshua, as we have been grafted in to believing Israel. So his statement of if. So this is a covenant type statement. He's saying, if you do this thing, so your end of the covenant from him. So when we look at this passage, we can see that Israel's part of the covenant, which is also our part of the covenant, is to keep the statutes and the commandments which he had given them. So as we had read through Leviticus before getting to this chapter, we read of those commandments that he gave Israel and also to us. He gave us and them detailed instructions on how to love him and how to worship him in a manner that was pleasing unto him, that would make him set apart amongst the nations of the world. We want to worship him in set apartness because he is set apart. And we worship him in set apartness by doing it according to his instructions, not doing it according to how we want to worship him. And he also gives us detailed instructions on how to love our neighbor, okay? So when we learn his statutes, that's why we need to learn his statutes. We need to learn his Torah, the commandments that he gave, so that we can walk in them and we can hold on or upkeep our end of the covenant. So as we go on to read here in this passage, we're going to see what his end of that covenant is when we walk and we are faithful to uphold our end of the covenant. And we read there in verse 4, the very first one, what did he say? Then I will give you rain in its season. The land shall yield its produce, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit. Now, we think about Israel going into the land. They lived in a very agricultural type environment or culture. I mean, pretty much every one of them had land and they had produce that they grew in their field. They pretty much grew their own food. So rain would be very important to them. They needed the rain in order for their crops to grow so they could grow their food, so they could eat, so they could provide for themselves, right? And he's saying the rain, you will get your rain. That's part of his end of the covenant. He is going to provide rain for them. He says the land is going to produce what it's supposed to produce. The trees are going to produce their fruit. In verse 5, your threshing shall last to the time of vintage, and the vintage shall last to the time of sowing. You shall eat your bread to the full and dwell in your land safely. So here in verse 5, we're still seeing that idea, that concept of provision and how bountiful their harvest is going to be. And his promise to them is that they're going to eat the bread to the full. Or you could say they will never lack anything to eat, but they will have plenty to eat. They will be able to eat until they are full or until they are satisfied. You know, we had spoken a previous teaching about, you know, the idea of how Adam worked the garden, but then when he fell, when he sinned in the garden, the curse that was given unto him was that he was going to have to work hard and labor hard over the ground in order to get the produce from the ground in order to eat. So what I see here in this passage is almost like a reversing of that curse that we see in Genesis. So to those who will walk in obedience to him, to those who will upkeep their end of the covenant, they're not going to have to labor so hard for their food. Now, they're going to work. They're going to go out there and work their fields. They're still going to have to sow their seed. They're still going to go out there and reap from their field. But the work that they do will not be in vain. They will not go out there and work and not receive anything in return. And not only are they going to not work in vain, and they're going to be able to see the fruit from the work of their hands, but it's going to be blessed. And the fact that it's going to be bountiful and they're going to have all that they need. So there's not going to be this worry or this need to stress over whether or not their fields are going to produce enough food for them, because they could believe and have faith in Yahweh that he was going to provide everything that they needed if they upheld their end of the covenant. Let's go to verse 6. I will give peace in the land, and you shall lie down, and none will make you afraid. I will rid the land of evil beasts, and the sword will not go through your land. You will chase your enemies, and they shall fall by the sword before you. 5 of you shall chase 100, and 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight. Your enemies shall fall by the sword before you, for I will look on you favorably and make you fruitful and multiply you and confirm my covenant with you. So in these verses here, we're seeing the promise that when they walk and keep his commandments, that now he is going to also protect them. He's talking about how they're going to see peace in the land, that they're not going to have to worry about their enemies attacking them, but Yahweh is going to protect them. He is going to be a hedge protection around them. He is going to actually fight their enemies for them. That's why it says that five of you will chase 100. Why? Because when they chase or they go after their enemy and they're walking in covenant with Yahweh, their presence of Yahweh is going with them. So when five of them's going, you also have the army of Yahweh, or you could say that his spiritual forces, his angels, are there with us, fighting for us, and that's why five were able to put 100, chase 100. Well, 100 of you can put 10,000 to flight because he is fighting for us. He's with us. And part of the way that he fights for us is he actually can put a spirit of fear upon our enemies. He has multiple ways of which he protects his people and he watches after his people. When I think about the idea of how he can put the spirit of fear upon his enemies, I think about, you know, when Hezekiah was being attacked by the king of Assyria, and, you know, the king of Assyria was bragging about how he had defeated all the other nations of the world, but Hezekiah refused to fall in fear, and he chose instead to trust Yahweh, that he would deliver Judah, and that he would fight for them, and because he chose to put his faith in Yahweh, we see that the king of Assyria would actually turn his back and would actually flee from Judah without Judah ever actually having to do anything to them. Why? Because Yahweh had put a spirit of fear upon that army, and so they fled. That was part of the blessing that we have when we walk with Yahweh, is that we walk in victory. We walk in victory over the enemy of this world, over Satan, when we are faithful to Yahweh's covenant. When we're faithful to his covenant, the enemy has no power over us. And if he tries to come after us, it is all in vain, because Yahweh fights for us. His angels are fighting for us, and he is guarding us and he is protecting us. Now, let's go ahead and look at verse 10. He says, "You shall eat the old harvest and clear out the old because of the new. I will set my tabernacle among you, and my soul shall not abhor you. I will walk among you and be your God, and you shall be my people." So here in this concept, we're seeing here that part of us and part of what he promised them, that when they walked in faithfulness in the covenant, that he would set his tabernacle among them. Remember, the tabernacle was representation of his presence. So by his tabernacle being among them, this is speaking of how he was going to dwell in the midst of their camp. His presence would be there. Okay? So now we are the dwelling place of God. His spirit is living inside of each one of us. And so when we are faithful to his covenant, he is faithful to dwell inside of us, and we become his tabernacle. We become the dwelling place of his spirit, and he will never leave us nor forsake us. And he says, "I will walk among you." He will abide with us. He will live in us. He will stay with us. He will remain with us. His spirit will empower us. His spirit will lead us, and his spirit will guide us. And also, he says that "I will be your God, and you will be my people." Now, the idea is that we are a special chosen people unto him, right? And he will be our God, or he will be our mighty one. So whatever we need, he is that for us. If we need deliverance, he is going to deliver us. If we need healing, he will bring healing. If we need provision, he will provide for us. By being our God, he is going to be the one that we can depend upon. So when we think about how they were promised this idea of rain and this bountiful fruit and harvest, and we can think about how that applies even to us today, you know, for some people, the idea of rain and your produce being fruitful, that's not going to be much of a blessing. You may not even have a garden. It may not mean much to you. But, you know, you have a job that you go and you work at and you labor every day. Well, that in our world is kind of symbolic of what we're thinking about them when it comes to their fields and the produce that they're harvesting. So we go to work and we labor to provide for ourselves and for our family. But, you know, there is a promise to us that when we walk in covenant with him, when we keep his commandments, when we love his commandments, when we keep his Torah, all of the instructions in which he has given us from the beginning of the book to the end of the book, loving him and loving people the way he has told us to do it, he is going to put his favor upon us, or you could say he puts his blessing upon us. So we, when we go in to work, when we do our jobs, his favor is upon us. We should experience his favor with our bosses, and we should experience his favor when it comes to doing our job. His blessing and his favor is upon us to where we are able to excel at the work at which we do. Think about it. His spirit is at work inside of us. He anoints us more than just the concept of preaching and sharing his word and to be a witness of his word to the nations of the world. He definitely has anointed each of us to be a witness of the good news of Yeshua to the nations of the world. He has anointed us to lay our hands upon the sick and for them to recover. But he also anoints our hands and gives us favor and blessings upon our hands so that we are fruitful and we excel at our work. And we can do it without having to kind of go into this hard, laborsome, stressful type work. And what I mean by that is not saying we don't work hard and we're lazy, but it's that through our work, we're not having to stress out. We're not having to worry. We're not having to have this hard work that brings sorrow about in order for us to excel at our job, because his favor and his blessing is upon us. And so we work in excellence. Our work is done in excellence. And also, he provides. So he provides us with an opportunity to be able to go and to work and to labor and to make money. So he provides us with that resource. But he also provides us with us being able to receive of that work, of being able to enjoy the benefits that come from our work. So being able to have food on our tables, being able to have a roof over our heads to lay down and sleep at night. So our needs are provided for because he blesses us and he provides for us. We don't have to worry or stress over our bills or where how this bill is going to get paid or if we're ever going to have enough food on the table, because he promises to be our God and he promises to provide for us. And just as he told them that they would eat the bread unto their full. So we will not go lacking when it comes to having food to eat. So that's one of the blessings and the joy that we can actually receive from walking in covenant with him is knowing that he is going to provide for us and that he's also going to protect us. As I talked about before, he's going to protect us. He's got a hedge of protection upon us, and he's going to protect us from the enemy of this world. Now, I want to look at verse 13. He says, I am Yahweh your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, that you should not be their slaves. I have broken the bands of your yoke and made you walk upright. So he is speaking here in this last verse regarding the blessings. In the next verse, he starts talking about what happens if they don't walk in obedience. So here in verse 13, I see a bit of a reminder to Israel. He's saying, I brought you out of Egypt. You were slaves in Egypt. Okay, so I brought you out of there to bring you here where you are in the wilderness. Ultimately, you're going to end up in the promised land, and I've brought you here to worship me and to walk upright. But we worship him by walking upright, right? So he's reminding you, I have redeemed you from slavery. Well, he has redeemed us from the slavery of sin. Yeshua was our Passover lamb who died upon that tree to redeem us from the slavery of sin. So no longer does sin have any power or reign over us who are believers in Yeshua. Now we have been set free to worship Yahweh and to love him how he wants to be loved. And his word says that if you love me, you will keep my commandments. As this verse says, I brought you out and made you walk upright. Or you could say, walk in obedience to my commandments, right? So he has redeemed us to walk in obedience to his word, or to be faithful to his covenant. That's why we were redeemed. We were redeemed from sin so that we could walk in covenant with the living God of Israel. And we could never walk in covenant with him. We could never be faithful to the covenant without the work of Yeshua, without his redemption, and the Spirit of the Father being poured out upon us and being placed inside of us, making it possible for us to walk upright before the living God, faithful to his covenant. Now, I want to look at a passage here in the New Testament, which gives us an example of this idea I'm talking about, of how when we are just simply obedient, that we can see this concept of this blessings that is poured out, of how we can receive of this harvest or this abundance without much work, by just walking in obedience. But when we work on our own and we're not following his word and we labor, we are not so blessed. You know, we're more fruitful in the things that we do when we're walking in obedience to his word than we ever will when we're trying to do it on our own strength and our own power. So Luke chapter 5 and verse 1. So it was, as a multitude pressed about him to hear the word of God, that he stood by the lake of Gennesareth and saw two boats standing by the lake. But the fishermen had gone from them and were washing their nets. Then he got into one of the boats, which was Simon's, and asked him to put out a little from the land. And he sat down and taught the multitudes from the boat. So what we see so far in this passage is Yeshua is walking about. He comes across a lake. He sees a boat standing there. We have a crowd of people there, and he is going to teach this crowd of people. He's going to ask them to let him sit in the boat, basically, and go out into the lake to teach. So let's look at verse 3. Then he got into one of the boats, which was Simon's, and asked him to put out a little from the land. And he sat down and taught the multitudes from the boat. So he sits down in the boat, boats led out into the lake, and he begins to teach the people from the boat a little bit from the shore there. Verse 4, when he had stopped speaking, he said to Simon, launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch. But Simon answered and said to him, Master, we have toiled all night and caught nothing. Nevertheless, at your word, I will let down the net. So when Yeshua is done, he looks at Simon. He says, okay, Go ahead, launch your boat out into the deep and let down your net. Now, Simon answers. He was, you know, remember, he had just been washing his nets. They had been out there all night long fishing. And the word here says they toiled all night. This was that hard labor type work. Remember the curse that was spoken to Adam when he sinned in the garden. This was that type of labor that was told to Adam that he would have to do in order to get fruit or produce from the ground. So Simon is out there putting in that same type of hard labor and trying to catch fish. And he did it all night long and was unable to catch anything. Now remember, Simon was a professional fisherman. He did this for a living. He knew what he was doing. And so when Yeshua comes along and says, you know, go out there and let down your net, you know, Simon's thinking, look, I know what I'm doing. I just labored and worked extremely hard all night. He was probably exhausted and tired because it said he toiled all night long. He wasn't just out there relaxing and taking a nice easy stroll trying to fish. I mean, he was working as hard as he could all night long trying to catch fish. But Simon doesn't look at Yeshua and say, you're crazy, you're out of your mind, I'm not doing it. But on the other hand, Simon says, look, I don't really understand why you're telling me to do this, but you're telling me to do it, so I'm going to be obedient. So he says, that's what he says, nevertheless, at your word, I will let down the net. So he chose to be obedient to what Yeshua was telling him to do. In verse 6, when they had done this, they caught a great number of fish, and their net was breaking. So they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled the boat so that they began to sink. And when Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Yeshua's knees, saying, depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. Now, look at this. They had worked all night, labored very hard in their own strength, in their own power, and caught nothing. And Simon, even though he didn't understand why Yeshua was telling him to do something, he was obedient and he did it anyway. And he caught probably the biggest catch he had ever caught as a professional fisherman because he was willing to be obedient to something Yeshua told him to do. He was much more fruitful in his work, or he was much more blessed, right? There was more favor upon his work when he was following the commands or the instruction or walking in obedience to Yeshua than when he was out there laboring on his own strength and power. It's the same with us. It's our willingness to be obedient, even at times when we don't understand why he's telling us to do what he's telling us to do. But if we're willing to just be obedient, even though we may not understand it, if we're just obedient, we can see this type of blessing and favor upon our lives. When we walk in obedience, we can expect this kind of favor to be upon our life. And we will experience this type of results from the work of our hands, and it's going to be a much greater reward than any reward that we would get by laboring on our own strength and power and doing our own thing. Now let's look at verse 9. For he and all who were with him were astonished at the catch of fish which they had taken. And so also were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. And Yeshua said to Simon, do not be afraid. From now on, you will catch men. So when they had brought their boats to land, they forsook all and followed him. Very interesting thing. Three guys who were professional fishermen who just experienced the biggest catch that they had probably ever had as fishermen. Okay? And upon seeing this act and this supernatural provision that was given to them by following the commands of Yeshua, they don't see this and say, oh man, we've learned a new way of fishing, let's continue doing this. No. I believe these three men knew the reason why that catch was so prosperous. And so because of that, when Yeshua told them, from now on you will catch men, or come follow me, leave behind this fishing, leave this lifestyle behind, and come with me. They willingly did it. They forsook all that they had because they saw that walking with Yeshua was better than them trying to live their own life on their own strength and their own ability. And that's what this is about when we're thinking about the joy of obedience. When we walk in obedience, it is actually a way of showing Yahweh that we trust him, that we trust his ways, that it's not about what we think, that we're not putting our trust in our ability and our thoughts and in our ways, but we're trusting that his thoughts and his ways are higher than ours, or they're better than ours. And we trust that he is our God. He is our provider. He is our deliverer. He is the one who fights for us. He is our guardian. So if we trust those things, then we say, then I will trust whatever you tell me to do. So if that requires me to forsake all to follow you, as that was required of the disciples, then we would be willing to forsake all to follow him. Now, I want to look at a passage here where we actually see the opposite of this effect, where we kind of see what happens when a person or a group of people choose not to be faithful to the covenant. So let's look at Judges chapter 6 and verse 1. Then the children of Israel did evil in the sight of Yahweh. So Yahweh delivered him into the hand of Midian for 7 years. So here in this passage, we're seeing that the children of Israel are doing evil, or what does that mean? They are walking in disobedience to Yahweh, to his commandments and the instructions in which he had given them. So he says, I'm going to deliver them into the hand of Midian for 7 years. And the hand of Midian prevailed against Israel because of the Midianites. The children of Israel made for themselves the dens, the caves, and the strongholds, which are in the mountains. So here we see this concept of, remember before, if you're walking in obedience to me, five of you will put 100 to flight, or you would chase after 100 of them. Well, here we're seeing because of their disobedience that they are now in fear of their enemy, the Midianites. And because they are in fear of them, they're hiding from them in the caves and in the mountains. Verse 3. So it was whenever Israel had sown, the Midianites would come up. Also, Amalekites and the people of the east would come up against them. Then they would encamp against them and destroy the produce of the earth and leave no sustenance for Israel, neither sheep nor ox nor donkey. So here we're seeing this concept that now they're laboring in the field and they're working hard, but they're not being able to enjoy the work of their hand. It is a blessing to be able to enjoy the fruit of your work. And they're not being able to enjoy that. In fact, it's being destroyed and it's being stolen from them. It's being taken away from them. Verse 5. For they would come up with their livestock in their tents, coming in as numerous as locusts. Both they and their camels were without number, and they would enter the land to destroy it. So Israel was greatly impoverished because of the Midianites, and the children of Israel cried out to Yahweh. Now let's look at Leviticus chapter 26 and verse 14. And in this passage, we are actually going to see how what we just read about here in Judges was spoken of in this chapter. We're going back to the very chapter we were just in, and these are the verses after he has spoken about the blessings and the benefit that comes to those who walk in obedience to him. So now we're going to see the opposite of what happens when a people choose not to. And it speaks of this, right? Verse 14, but if you do not obey me and do not observe all these commandments, and if you despise my statutes, or if your soul abhors my judgments, so that you do not perform all my commandments, but break my covenant, I will also do this to you. I will even appoint terror over you, wasting disease and fever, which shall consume the eyes and cause sorrow of heart. And you shall sow your seed in vain, for your enemies shall eat it. I will set my face against you, and you shall be defeated by your enemies. Those who hate you shall reign over you, and you shall flee when no one pursues you. We're seeing the exact opposite of what is promised in the blessing, right? If you walk in my ways, if you're obedient to my word, then what happens? The land is fruitful. We get to enjoy the fruit that comes from the land. We will eat the bread until we're full, right? It talks about this great endless harvest that we're pulling in and going out into the field and reaping from. And now he's talking about how you will sow your seed, but you will not be able to eat of that seed. He says your sowing is in vain. He says your enemy is going to eat it. And that's what we see here in Judges, is the Midianites and the Amalekites, they were coming into the land and they were stealing of the seed that Israel had planted there in the land, and they were enjoying the benefit or the blessing of the work that Israel had put in, instead of Israel enjoying the blessing of the work that they had done. Why? Because Israel chose to be disobedient, or you could say because they chose to be unfaithful to the covenant. So when we are unfaithful, these are the things that we can begin to see happen in our lives. We can begin to work or labor in vain instead of our work and our labor being prosperous and being filled with blessings and us being able to enjoy the work of our hands. All right, so let's look at John chapter 15 and verse 9. As a father loved me, I also have loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you, and that your joy may be full. This is Yeshua here speaking to his disciples. Yeshua talks about his relationship with his Father a lot, and it's recorded here in the book of John. And some of the things that we can pick up from the book of John is, you know, Yeshua talks about how he came and he did the will of his Father, right? And he talks about how him and his Father are one, or how they walked in agreement, how Yeshua was submitted to his Father, okay? So he comes and he obeys and he keeps the commandments of his father. He says it here in his verse, I have kept my father's commandments. He would say in other places, I have spoken the words that he told me to speak. He did the things that his father told him to do. So what we see is Yeshua came, submitted to the Father, painting a picture to us of what we can actually do if we live a life in submission to the Father. If we keep the Father's commands. If we do what he tells us to do. If we speak the words he tells us to speak. That we don't speak our own words. That we don't do our own things. But everything we do in submission to him. Okay, Yeshua says that he abided or he stayed or he remained in his father's love. He stayed in that special connection with his father. So he sets an example for us of how we need to stay in this relationship, in this love, in this submission to the Father. And we do this how? He says in verse 10, if you keep my commandments. So if we keep his commandments, if we keep the Father's commandments, okay? So if we keep all the commandments that we see recorded in Scripture, in the Torah, we will stay or we will remain in his love. We will keep ourselves postured in a lifestyle of being submitted to the Father. Now, of course, we could never accomplish this on our own strength and our own power. It's why first we have to be redeemed. We have to have put our belief in Yeshua. We have to have faith in him that he has justified us, that he has cleansed us of all of our sin. He has delivered us from the power of sin and he has set us free. And we need to understand what he has set us free to do. He hasn't set us free for us to go and just do whatever we want to do, but he has set us free in order to live a life submitted to the Father so we can abide or stay in love with him or walking in a faithful covenant with our God. And if we do this, if we do the things he has spoken to us, okay, if we keep his commandments, he says that my joy may remain in you. So the idea here is, and what he is saying is, when we are faithful in the covenant, when we walk in obedience, when we live in submission to the Father, it's not a grievous thing, and it shouldn't be a hard, burdensome thing. But when you're doing it the right way, his joy is actually in you, which means that you will experience his joy. He says that your joy may be full. It is a joyful thing to walk in covenant with him. It is a joyful thing to be obedient to him. And part of that joy that comes from that is receiving the blessings and the favor that is poured out upon us from our God. The fact that we no longer have to worry and stress about the work we're doing and whether or not it's good enough and whether or not we will have enough. But we can know that if we're out there doing our best and we are doing our best to walk in covenant with him, then his blessing is upon us, his favor is upon us, and he will bless the work that we are doing. And that is a joyful thing. That brings joy to us when we do that. But when we choose not to be submissive to him, when we choose not to be faithful to his covenant, we are now putting ourselves in a spot to where his blessings and his favor aren't going to be there. If we're willfully being hard-hearted and stiff-necked and not caring about his commandments and being stubborn and resisting his word and his correction in our lives when he brings correction, then we are going to be like Israel was, and our work will be done in vain. He's going to bring correction because he loves us. He wants us to walk in his joy. He wants us to walk in his blessing. You know, I think of another scripture where it says, you know, at his right hand or pleasures forevermore. In his presence is fullness of joy. And at his right hand are pleasures forevermore. So walking in covenant and relationship with Yahweh, walking a life that is submitted unto him and living in his presence, staying in his presence, is a life that is full of joy with pleasures forevermore. It's not a dull, boring life that is no fun whatsoever, but it is actually the exact opposite. If we want to experience joy, the real joys and the real pleasures of life, then we just need to find ourselves in his presence. Or we could say we need to be walking in a faithful covenant, keeping relationship with him by keeping his commandments. Well, hallelujah. I hope that this has blessed you. It has certainly enriched my life studying this out and delivering this message. You know, we will be back again next week. I hope that you join us next week for that teaching. So come back now. And shalom, y'all.